It's the Rise and Shop podcast, presented by the Deseret News. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Get this and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast. In this episode, Matt and I talk about the state of men's basketball, football recruiting, and former Cougars trying to make the NFL. But first up, it's Jerem Jordan of BYU TV. You can find us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Or if you'd like to send in questions or provide feedback, you can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. And right now, it's Jerem Jordan. Rise and Shout podcast, Jerem Jordan, known for his work on BYU TV. Jerem, welcome back.
Holler at you, Adam. It's great to be on the Rise and Shout podcast again.
Appearance? I'm just trying to catch Rebell, I think.
Let's see. Actually, you have passed, Greg. I forgot to tell you that last time you were on the show. You are now the all-time, with this appearance, Jerem, you are now the all-time leading guest, slightly ahead of both Greg Rebell and Jay Drew. So,
hey, this is quite the day for me. It's a banner day. I'd like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank Spencer. I'm just so excited now.
Why are you thinking Spencer? Spencer doesn't have anything.
I don't know.
Contractual
obligation.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Jerem. We got you to 24, so appearances.
Check.
So we're good.
24?
Wow, 24 appearances out of, this is episode 278, so not quite 10% of the episodes.
Okay.
We got to get you a t-shirt or something that says, I sometimes go on the Rise and Shot podcast.
That'd be amazing. And not worth the cost of making.
And no, not most certainly not. So let's start off here. We'll start off on the high note, if you will. A lot has happened, and you guys have talked about it on your show with the basketball program since the end of the season. So let's just, we don't need to recap the news because everybody listening to this podcast knows the news. But the piece that kind of stuck out to me was there was a word that was used by a national commentator about the program when he was specifically talking about Eric Mika's chances at the NBA. And he used the word dysfunctional to describe the BYU basketball program. Now, Jerem, do you think that is an accurate description of what's going on with the program? And it's also possibly he was taken a little bit out of context too, but do you think that's the reality or do you think that's the perception right now of the men's basketball program?
I think dysfunction is too strong of a word. I really do. It's not like, if BYU basketball is a marriage, I don't think they had marital problems. They just had some issues, right? Was the NIT first round bowing out at home and getting blown out by St. Mary's in the semis of the WCC tourney and the plans? No, but I wouldn't call it dysfunction. I mean, if Eric Mika leaves, that's because he wants to kind of move on, and maybe it has something to do with how last season went. You'd think that had something to do with it, because if it went really well, would he have bounced or would he have stayed and trying to see what they could do? I don't know, and we'll see how that plays out. Dysfunction is too strong a word, in my opinion. It wasn't ideal, but it wasn't dysfunctional. I mean, we didn't see anything on the court, blow-ups. That would have boiled to the surface. Dysfunction would have manifested itself physically. We would have seen it on the bench. We would have seen it on the court. Coaches yapping at players with more consistency outside of kind of the normal flow there.
Right. Okay. That's fair. So what, and I've talked to other guests about this. Matt and I have spent many minutes talking about it on the podcast. What needs to change? Obviously, Rose pointed out at the end of the year he wasn't satisfied where the season ended. Certainly, the players have mentioned that as well in interviews that they didn't. Obviously they were disappointed. NCAA tournament is always the goal, and all those things. So what's gotta change within the program to get this back on track? Is it just time of the maturation of the players, or do you think there's some bigger fundamental issues within the program that have to be addressed?
Yeah, I'll share my opinion before or after this. Dave Rose, in that roundtable with the media, which I was at, he did say, "Listen, we're going to look at everything, and we need to make some changes." So to Dave's credit, He doesn't think like, oh, this is good and this is good. We just have to work on this. He says, look, we got to look at everything. We got to make sure we are good with everything. Obviously, having a new assistant coach certainly helps because with culture. I think defensively, Heath Stroyer was the architect of BYU's last defense in the top 20, and that was 16 years ago, and that was his defense. So I think certainly he'll bring some newness to the table. McKelly Wesley was on BYU Sports Nation today and mentioned there's going to be more confidence with the defense. That's a phrase that Heath Stroyer has used. And he said, I'd never thought about confidence on defense. We always think of it offensively. You don't think about it defensively. So I think there'll be a culture change that way. It's great to have a guy that has been a head coach in three different time zones, 20 years of experience. Maybe he's the new guy and he can come in and kick butt a little bit. Whereas last year, I didn't get the sense there was a bad cop guy. I think you need a guy on the staff that's like, no, this is not acceptable and you need to own up to it, you know?
Right.
So I think that'll be good. I think Troy is a fantastic hire. Because he was at BYU, some people are like, well, wait, we couldn't find a guy that hadn't been here before. But if I told you, okay, we're going to get a guy with 20 years experience in college basketball, three head coaching gigs in three different time zones, and he understands the culture, he's not LDS, that's helpful in recruiting, right? You would be like, oh, that sounds good, probably, right? That sounds like good. That's who Heath Stroyer is. It's a fantastic hire, in my opinion, for BYU.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a great hire. Now, from your perspective, you said you're gonna, answer it from Dave Rose's what he said. Do you feel like there's any besides the defense? Is there something else that's not working that has to change? Is it recruiting? Is it offensive style of play? What else do you think we might see a change in before next year?
Yeah, definitely defense. That's the first one. Then just kind of a general culture change of. Hey, we're gonna buy into what's going on, and we're gonna do it this way, right? There was kind of this group was young. Obviously, the experience I think will help, but I think having a new guy will help with kind of a culture change, and maybe just maybe last year was a necessary stepping stone in the success of this program, so that there could be kind of a slap in the face, a reality check, which no one wants. But after that, I won't be surprised if BYU plays a better brand of basketball because they had to look themselves in the mirror a little closer. Ideally, you want every year to kind of just be good and everything's great. Programs have down years. And after that, the good programs kind of rebound and go to the next step, right? If a right. down year is 22 wins and third place in the league behind two teams, by the way, who are ranked wire to wire, that's okay. It's going to be okay.
I was around for the last time BYU had a true down period. This is a lot better.
it took 4 years to get to the tourney, and that was amazing, right? And BYU kind of hung at that level almost ever since. Yeah, times are good. Obviously, when the standard isn't met, it just stinks. But I think that last year is going to be a catalyst for good change for BYU.
So do you think, I've thought about this particular angle quite a bit, which is, this Lone Peak 3, whatever you want to call them, they came in with a lot of hype, right? They were a team, as they played together in high school, that did very well nationally as a high school team. You had these three guys show up, all highly recruited, all could have played at other places and were recruited by very good schools. Though in some cases not a lot because some of them committed to BYU pretty early in the process. But you have this expectation that, okay, these guys were elite high school team. I think a lot of fans, myself included, were like, well, this is going to be one of the best BYU teams potentially ever with these three guys. Was that an unrealistic expectation based on what we knew, or was it realistic? It's just the range of what could potentially happen, unfortunately, so far has been more on the lower end of what they could do.
I think it was fair at first, but in hindsight, when were the Lone Peak 3 amazing in high school? When they were upperclassmen, right?
Right.
They didn't come
right.
in as freshmen and sophomores, kind of dominate. Well, that's what they were last year. They were all freshmen and sophomores. In fact, Rubel dug up that and it was fantastic. The BYU had never started 500 classes in the history of the program. That is bonkers. And for us to expect immediate productivity from those three in company immediately, probably, I mean, obviously in hindsight it was too much, but I think we need to give these guys until they're upperclassmen to kind of see what they can do. And obviously the injuries, had they come in and there had been a healthy LJ Rose and Kyle Davis all year, maybe it's a little different. Even then, there wasn't the upperclassmen in place to kind of buffer the transition period. TJ House comes in and he averages, you know, 12 or 13 a game and he's first team all league. And that was amazing. Nick Emery's numbers dipped a little bit. If Elijah Bryant's healthy, there's another guy. BYU needed kind of juniors and seniors to ease the transition. And then I think we would have seen something a little better. But now these guys have that experience. I think it was fair to think that initially. And some of that was self-imposed. They said, you know, we won a national title in high school, so we feel like we can do the same thing at the next level. Well, I don't think they meant, like, in year one.
Right,
I think
right.
they meant in, like, year three.
Right,
you know, or
right.
something where they could compete at a high level.
Yeah, for sure. Well, looking forward, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Mika, though we'll know here within the next week and a half. Regardless of that, you look at some of the additions and or just people returning to the program, and what are we gonna see that's different? I think there's a lot of folks going, gosh, if Mika's gone, we're toast. I mean, are we even gonna win 20 games next year? And it's a kind of a gloomy outlook. But based on some of these other guys, Bergerson coming in, Celius coming back, as well as some other folks. I mean, what do you expect to see that will be different from a personnel standpoint that might back up with the new coaching hire and some of the other things are coming along?
Yeah, I think I feel like Eric Mika is not going to come back. We'll see, but I don't feel like he's going to come back. If he does not, I still think BYU could be a bubble team, and if they get in, barely get in or something, I think that the team's going to be young again, but they're going to have – some of them will be juniors. Let's be good. They'll have that experience. I like the new guys that are coming in, although I'm going to give them a little bit of time to kind of figure it out. I think Yoli Child's going to make a big jump. I hope he makes a Keenan Young-type jump in the next 2 years to where he's a first-team all-league kind of guy, because Keenan was this, like, backup, decent. We're like, what? And then he turned into this. 16, 18 a game, conference player of the year type guy. Maybe that's in the cards for Yoli. I think Zach Celius is a big game changer. If he can get that shoulder good to go, he's a game changer, especially BYU can go small. They can put him at the four, which that's not actually going small. He's just a guard. He's just kind of thin. And then Jashir Hardnett is the kind of guy that's given BYU so many fits.
Yeah.
Now BYU has that guy to match up with somebody else who's quick, has a strong left hand, which is kind of different, who shoots a high percentage from three but doesn't shoot a ton, likes to get after it on the defensive end. Ryland Bergerson can kind of ease his way into all of this. Dalton Nixon hopefully can make some threes as a stretch four as well off the bench. Ryan Andrus, Luke Worthington, we'll see how they fit in with this group. But I like it. It's still young. But I think defensively, BYU can have a different scheme, devote more resources on that end. And we'll see how the offense changes. You know what's going to be different? Everything.
Yeah.
Because Terry Nashev has gone offensively, it potentially. I think that Dave Rose's principles of up tempo will still be enacted, and then defensively, Heath Schroyer's system will be in there, and we'll see how much different that is. But I think it's going to be a new look, and I think that this group is going to pay the price in the offseason to be good and compete. Yet, I still think BYU finishes in third with or without Mika in the league. I don't think that changes anything because Gonzaga will be number two probably. And St. Mary's looks like the front runner in the league.
Yeah, they certainly do. Certainly, Gonzaga's getting bitten by their stud going pro as well. So that it'd be a whole different league, I think, if a couple of those guys were staying in the WCC. But unfortunately, I think you're right. I don't think Mika's going to be there next year. So let's switch topics here a little bit to men's volleyball, a team that you cover and announce their games. Let's kind of assess their season as we look back. Obviously, they're a contender year in and year out, and it's a smaller national stage than some of the other sports. But they're a contender year in, year out, and here they make it to the championship game, second year in a row against the same opponent, lose. Is this, for them, was this a disappointing season, a met expectations, good season, happy to be there, or was this maybe a little bit exceeds based on the injuries and maybe some of the other challenges they had towards the end of the year?
I think preseason, if you had said, okay, here's what's going to happen preseason, I would have said, okay, yeah, that's probably how it shakes out. Having been there at the national title match, I thought, okay, if BYU wins this, and I said it on BYU Sports Nation, I said this would be the best win in program history, given the drought, given the injuries that they'd fought through, given at Ohio State against the back to, but you know, the champs who'd beaten them the year before, blah, blah, blah. That was going to be a tough match, and it was, and BYU really didn't compete in that one, unfortunately, at the level they wanted to. So I'm probably going to say, in terms of expectations, it probably reached expectations, which was, let's get back to the title. Let's win the league, which they won the regular season with Long Beach State. They bowed out in the semis. That was a bummer. But they got the result they wanted, which was win the semi against Long Beach State, which Long Beach State was the number one ranked team, number two seed. Got to the title game. And, you know, same thing as last year. BYU certainly was disappointed. And I was in the locker room after the Long Beach State win and the Ohio State loss. Those guys were pumped to get the title game, but they had unfinished business and didn't complete it. And it was – they were bummed. They were bummed. But and next year, kind of the window is closed on that group. You don't have Langlois. You don't have Patch. Brendan Sander will be back. BYU will load up with some talented guys. But I think next year is a year where if they do get to the Final Four again, that would be really good. And then you kind of build from there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, they lost to a really good Ohio State team 2 years in a row. So it's not, you know, nothing to hang your head about for sure. Last topic, maybe the most important topic, Jerem. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Did you like it better than the first one?
I think I laughed more in the second one.
Right.
I think I liked the first movie more. But the second movie wasn't far behind. So I compared – we're doing 12-second movie reviews on the show. I give a 12-second movie review. And then on a scale of Jake Heaps to Jim Fredette, I tell you who I thought it was in BYU Sports. So I said the first Guardians was Taylor Sander. And then the second was Brendan. Like, really, really good. Like, and close, but not quite. But still really good, right? Does that make sense?
Yo, it makes perfect sense to me. I don't know if Brendan would agree with your take on how that is.
I know Brendan well. Hopefully he's okay with that.
I liked it. I probably liked it better, Jerem, than the first one.
Nice.
It was definitely a funnier movie. Obviously, anytime you have a sequel, it's kind of cool when you meet the characters for the first time and, you know, you go through that. You know, and my wife almost cried. She was really close. And I took her for the night before Mother's Day because that's just the kind of husband I am.
You know? You're a great husband. Cry like sad or happy? Like laughing?
No, like, well, she almost did cry laughing during some of the Drax comments. But no, it was sad. Like at the end, we're not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
But she was close to crying. Now, granted, she cries in a lot of movies. So, I mean,
yeah, I was going to say she's a crier if she's going to cry.
It's not a super high threshold, but it's not like, it's not, you know, the lowest either. So,
right.
But I thought it was good. So among the, among the Marvel movies, where do you place it? We're not going to rank them all here, but I mean, is it in the top third, the top three or four or five, or you think, nah, it's more of a mid-level type of Marvel movie?
I would go like top six.
I think it's
up there. Like, I think Guardian, yeah. Because I'm going both Avengers. I'm going, you know, the original Iron Man. I'm going Civil War. I'm going Ant-Man was awesome.
Ant-Man was good. I do like myself
Ant-Man's
Ant-Man.
Like sneaky. Yeah, sneaky, really good. Guardians just came out of left field. I don't know any of the characters. I don't know any of the planets yet. I loved it. So that's really good storytelling when I don't care what the... I could, you know, after the first movie, I was like, I don't know what anything is called, but I love that. If Guardians, you know what, maybe not top six. I would go top 10. Top 10.
All right. That's good. That's good. I like it.
How about you? What do you think?
I would say top, I might put it top six. I would have Civil War. I'd have the original Guardians of the Galaxy somewhere in there. Like I said, I liked it a little better. But like you, I think the brothers there are a good corollary. I just may have switched which brother I used to rate it. Ant-Man would be up there, the original Iron Man. I don't like the Avengers movies, though I love both of those. Aren't as interesting to me usually as some of the individual movies, but I'd put it close. I'll tell you what. I look at they've now got like 14 movies that are considered in here, and you look at that and you go, it's not Pixar level, Jerem, and as far as not having duds, but man, you look at that and you go.
Besides Howard the Duck?
Besides Howard the Duck. I'm not counting Howard the Duck. Nothing from the 80s. Nothing from the 80s counts.
I love that they just blatantly throw that in.
Oh, my gosh. My gosh. Have you ever seen Howard the Duck?
No.
Don't. You don't need to see it. It's a movie I watched as a kid and thought was kind of good. And then when I've watched it as an adult, you just go back and go, wow, that was some weird stuff. And
yeah.
That was a low point for a lot of people involved with that movie. But anyway, well, we'll definitely next time you're on, we may have another movie with Spider-Man to talk about. And we've got Wonder Woman next time you're on. I mean, there's a lot of geeky movies coming up. So we'll have more to talk about for sure. And we'll definitely I do enjoy the 12-second movie reviews, by the way. Spencer doesn't have a lot.
Bring it. We don't have time for more, you know.
Yes.
We don't have the budget for more either.
Spencer doesn't have a lot to say, I've noticed.
I've been assigned the 12 seconds, so
yeah.
Use all 12, I think.
That's right. Let's use it all up. 12 seconds goes fast. Well, Jerem, thanks for joining and coming on the show. And as always, now that you're the all-time leader, people are chasing you, Jerem Jordan.
Oh, man, what a position to be in. I'm almost uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll just have Greg on like three or four times in a row, really get the rivalry fired up.
Greg's my good buddy. I would love that.
That'd be awesome. All right, well, Jerem, thanks for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Anytime, Adam.
Matt, you're going to sound like you're a guest today and not a co-host.
So does this mean I've been demoted or what? I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is going to be awkward live on the podcast, but you're just now sometime guest. I'm going to call on their phone.
Is it ever really live on the podcast? I mean,
it is for me. But no.
I guess so.
It's not really live. So Matt, let's see how geeky you are. We've talked about your growing geekiness that's infecting you like a virus, but a good virus.
I'm being assimilated. I'm getting assimilated like with the Borg.
Wow, you just used a Star Trek reference. And correctly. Well done. Well done.
Yes, you did.
Don will be proud. Matt, have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Negative.
Just talked with Jerem about this. You have not. Get off your duff and go see it.
So I need to see the first one first.
What?
So the plan was to watch the first one this last weekend, and it did not work out. So we're going to have to do that this weekend.
Okay, well, all I'm going to say is get her done, dude. Get her done. This is important stuff. It's a fantastic movie. You'll love it.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's very good. Well, Matt, we're gonna open up with jumping straight into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
This comes off of Facebook from a gentleman by the name of Keith Smith. That seems too generic of a name, though. I don't think he's a real person.
Yeah, you know how many people named Keith Smith I've met in my lifetime?
50. A billion.
At least 50.
At least 50. Well, this Keith Smith says. It's a question for me, specifically, Matt. It said, did Adam ever play one-on-one basketball against any college roommates? That's a strange question to ask, isn't it, Matt?
It's a bizarre question for a very randomly named person, Keith Smith.
Yeah. And as I looked up who this Keith Smith was, he went to BYU, shocker, and he also got his MBA at Purdue University.
Jeez, that's starting to sound a little creepy, Adam.
Starting to sound weird. And he looks kind of familiar. Like he might have been my college roommate.
That's weird.
That is weird. And I will neither confirm nor deny ever playing one-on-one against any of my college roommates, and specifically Keith Smith.
And I think we all know why you wouldn't either confirm or deny that.
Well, I just don't want to humiliate.
I was going to say because you've been advised to do so by your attorney.
Yes. Very good. But Keith, if you're listening, I'm pretty sure I could have beat Josh one-on-one. I'm just saying that. I'll leave that out there. Doesn't mean anything to anybody
who's
else.
Who's Josh?
Josh Ford.
What is this?
I could have beat him one-on-one. He wasn't a basketball player, though, so it's not a big thing of fame. But he asked the question, Matt, and when our listeners ask questions, we answer. Even if
we do.
Even if it makes absolutely no sense. So, Matt, let's go right now.
And even if our answer, as in this case, is a non-answer.
That's right. Well, as I said, my attorneys had something to say about this one. So anyway, Matt, let's go now to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com, the best compilation of news for BYU sports on the interwebs. Matt, BYU softball is in the tournament. They'll be heading to NCAA regionals, unfortunately hosted by the school up north. But they're playing really well, and I think have a pretty good chance of advancing past the regionals, Matt. So good luck to the BYU softball team that starts, I believe, their opening round game is Thursday, and we're recording this on Monday night.
Go Cougs!
Hector Lives on Twitter, that's at Naletto, says this: who will go deeper in the postseason, BYU baseball or BYU softball? Matt, we haven't really talked much softball or baseball this spring, BYU softball or baseball, or actually any. We did our MLB preview show, but that was about it. Matt, your completely uneducated opinion on who will go farther?
My completely uneducated opinion is leaning baseball.
I am going to go softball, and here's why. The softball team is already starting. The baseball team will start West Coast Conference Tournament play. I just think, you know, in the West Coast Conference Tournament could go poorly. You get a worse seed. That being said, both these teams are incredibly hot. Between the two of them, okay, softball has lost one game since March 30th. Just last week or against St. Mary's, they split a series in Moraga. Baseball, on the other hand, Matt, has not lost in May and only lost a couple of games in April. They're both really hot. So I think we're going to see both of them play well in the postseason. The softball team, 44-11.
Is that good?
4-11. I think that's good.
I'm not sure if that's good. It seems like it would be good to me.
And they played well against in that Puerto Vallarta college tournament at the beginning. They had tough losses against Oklahoma and Auburn and beat Washington. And since then, they've also had some really good wins since then. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see, and we'll follow those two teams into the postseason. Matt, we're going to talk a little bit more about the NFL, but saw an interesting article by friend of the podcast, Darnell Dixon, in the Daily Herald about Kyle Collinsworth and his chasing of his MBA dream. Matt, it sounds like Kyle Collinsworth is still all in and trying to get into the NBA.
Yeah, you got to chase that as long as you can, right?
Yeah, and as we know, we didn't talk a lot about this during the season, but he did play in the Dallas Mavericks NBA Development League. Aren't they changing the name of that? think they're changing the name of that next year. I can't remember.
They really ought to. I feel like D-League is, they could do better than that.
They could definitely do better than that. He averaged 6.4 points, 7.1 rebounds, and 3.9 assists a game. Sounds like a KC line for sure. And he was called Air Mormon on the team.
You know what? I have a sneaking suspicion that he's not the first guy to ever be called that.
I don't know. I can neither confirm nor deny whether anyone else has ever been called that.
You're pretty non-committal tonight.
I can neither confirm nor deny my level of commitment.
Wow. That's pretty meta right there. You took it to a whole new level.
That's right, it did. Well, Matt, before we go on to where we'll talk a little bit about some of the NFL guys that are looking to make teams and make waves in the NFL, you had something you wanted to share with our listeners.
Yeah, thanks. I thought this would be a good opportunity to let everybody know something I'm pretty excited about. This fall in November, I've been selected to run the TCS New York City Marathon as part of a team raising money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And as some of our listeners know, this is an issue that's near and dear to our hearts, as this year marks the 25th anniversary of when we lost our older brother Mitch to suicide. And the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is dedicated to saving lives and bringing hope to those affected by suicide through scientific research, educating the public on suicide prevention, advocating for good public policy on mental health, and providing support to families and survivors. And so I'm pretty excited about the opportunity to raise some funds for this organization. I'm obviously really excited about the opportunity as well to be able to run in the New York City Marathon. And so that's going to take place the first weekend in November. And we'll have a link in the show notes to the fundraising website for those of you who'd like to participate in the fundraiser. But at any rate, I'd encourage everybody to spend a little bit of time on AFSP.org, becoming familiar with some of the material there so that you can be in a position to reach out and help anybody in need or that you may come across.
Thanks, Matt. That, as you said, is obviously something very near and dear to our hearts. And, you know, you and I talked about this a little bit when Tanner Mangum talked about his struggle with mental illness, several weeks ago on the podcast. So, you know, you and I don't get too serious very often on the podcast, but this is one where obviously there's going to be more information as you get closer. Right, Matt?
Absolutely. We'll keep everybody posted on how things are going and how effectively I'm training, and it should be a fun adventure.
I am also training. I am training to watch you.
Hey, every bit of support counts, Adam.
I'll be sitting. I'm starting my training regimen in July as well. I will be watching people run on television, just to get used to watching people run.
That's probably a very effective
approach.
It's
very good. It's very good. So, Matt, let's talk about shifting gears here to the NFL. With the first pick in the NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select another decade of being terrible.
I thought you were going to go with selecting mediocrity again. That's always been my favorite.
Mediocrity seems too high. Like, I was listening back to the show, and I'm like, they don't ever select mediocrity. Like, that's too high for the Browns, isn't it?
Yeah, you're probably right.
If you're a Browns fan right now, wouldn't you say mediocrity sounds terrific?
Yeah, I think you would probably settle for that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
mediocrity sounds like you're in the playoff hunt. You're still in the playoff hunt in week 9.
Yeah, you're the Cowboys. That's mediocrity. Oh, man, am I poking the bear there?
No, that's great. I got no problem with that.
Yeah, I'm sure 90% of our listeners don't have any problem with that.
You kidding me? 90% of our listeners grew up when the Cowboys were one of the best teams in the NFL. So you're talking about a group of people that this is a love or hate thing. There's going to be no middle ground on this.
There's no middle ground.
People are either going to be thoroughly annoyed that you're picking on their beloved Cowboys, America's team, or they're going to love it.
Well, if they're annoyed,
there will be no middle ground here.
If they're annoyed, they should be more annoyed with Jerry Jones' terrible management of their team. I mean, I'm just pointing out facts. Mediocrity is them. I mean, that's just how it is. So anyway, Green Bay Packers, Matt and Jamal Williams. We'll get to Taysom Hill here in a minute. There's a nice story on Packers.com about how excited Williams was to be selected by the Packers and came to the locker room and got dressed in the Green Bay stuff. There were some other pieces as well this week about how they have five rookie running backs, all who will be contending for playing time. Matt, now that the dust has settled, how do you feel about Jamal Williams? Do you still feel as good about Jamal Williams to the Packers as we did right after the draft?
I think so. I know, we were pretty excited about when it happened. I think some of the early reports were that it was a good situation for him. I think Jamal has an opportunity here to become the back in Green Bay.
I think I stand by. I'm not any more excited because we don't really have any new information, right? I stand by that he will get the most carries of any Green Bay back next year. He will. I'm not. They're going to do a committee thing. He's not going to like lead the NFL in carries or anything. And I don't think he'll be Rookie of the Year or any of that stuff. But I think he's going to make an impact on a playoff team in his rookie year. That's not a bad way to start the career.
Right. So, not bad at all.
Somebody that's trying to join the roster and continue being a teammate with Jamal Williams, and they've been teammates, I believe, since 1996 is when Taysom and Jamal both joined the BYU program right before Lavelle retired. So you look at this and it's Taysom Hill, and you and I talked a ton before the draft and before the BYU Pro Day about, well, maybe Taysom doesn't go as a quarterback. There is no doubt at this point that he was signed as a quarterback and the plan is quarterback. Okay. An article on, the Wisconsin State Journal, nice piece on him and talked about it and talked about his injuries and different stuff. And Detmer came and talked about how great he was in this article as well. Matt, were we just wrong? I mean, does he have a chance at an NFL career here, or is this just a highly talented guy and Green Bay's taking a flyer on him, but it's still a very, very low chance that he ever takes a meaningful snap in the NFL?
I don't know that I'm any more excited about the Taysom Hill situation now than I was before the draft, right? The fact that somebody picked him up isn't a huge surprise. But if you're Green Bay, there's very little risk to what you've done.
Yes.
You found a guy that's extremely athletic, that fought some injuries during his college career, has some raw skills stuff you can't teach, right? And you're going to bring him in for very low cost financially. And you're not giving up a roster spot. You're going to bring him in through rookie camp and maybe into the summer and see what he's got. So until you see Green Bay really have to give something up in order to hold on to Taysom, then that's going to indicate that he really, really has a shot. But the fact that they're bringing him in, clearly talking about him as a quarterback, and that's the way they've been looking at him all along, I think that bodes well for his chances. Because they already have an idea of what they want to use him for, right? If it was one of those situations where they're like, well, let's just grab this guy because he's athletic, we'll bring him in here, a la Tim Tebow to New England, and we'll kind of see where he can fit or what he can do. I feel like that's a little bit too nebulous, and it's a little bit harder to break through in some ways when there's not a clear place or a clear plan for you. At least here they've got a place and a plan for where they think they would have him fit.
Yeah, yeah. I think, Matt, the other thing that might have helped him was playing in that pro-style offense in his senior year. He ran an offense, that go fast, go hard offense that I don't know that was particularly helpful, right, for NFL. I mean, there's a lot of noise this year about how a lot of the QBs aren't ready to play right away because they didn't play in offenses that were relevant. You know, he took a lot of snaps under center. He did some things. I think it helped him. In the end, I still think it's a fairly long shot, You know, but as we talked about before, there's no stud in front of him for a backup spot. You know what I mean? Like, if he ends up being the third quarterback on the depth chart when the season starts, is it going to be a little bit of a surprise to me? Sure, but it's certainly not shocking with who else they have on the roster.
No.
So, Matt, let's talk about two more players. Harvey Longy with the Patriots, you know, signed, you know, for a lot of money for a rookie free agent. I think it's almost 100% he makes this roster. As long as he plays decently well, he right now it will be competing with a guy from Maine, and a guy, a special teams type of guy, for roster spots, or at least a position as a linebacker. And interestingly enough, he'll also be teaming up with his old buddy Kyle Van Noy. Anyway, Matt, interesting to me, what as you look at this roster, is it coming together, feeling better or worse about Harvey Longy, or the same as we did after the draft?
Really in the same place for Harvey Longy as we did right after the draft. I still think it's the right fit for him, and I think the Patriots have shown some indication that they're really interested.
Yeah, for sure. So Matt, the last guy we're going to talk about, there was a story in Canal Street Chronicles, which is the SB Nation arm of the New Orleans Saints site for SB Nation. They had a nice piece on Setautu about basically, you know, if he had been at the NFL draft combine, his numbers would have looked really good, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, in a lot of ways, it looked really good. Now, granted, they talked a little bit about, you know, statistically, he had some good games and other things. But obviously, this wasn't something that, he didn't get drafted. He didn't have that kind of career. Matt, the more I'm looking at the Saints roster, we talked a little bit about this. I think Tautu makes that roster.
Yeah, this could be. There's every couple of years we get a guy like this that'll surprise us when he gets up to the next level.
Yeah, yeah. Who had a good college career, but wasn't one of the stars. He wasn't Van Noy. He wasn't Longy. He wasn't Fred Warner. But had a good college career, right? You never, like, when people talked about him potentially making the NFL, I wasn't like head scratching like, well, that guy was terrible, right?
Right. I mean, he was a contributor. He was a player.
Yeah.
And maybe this is another one of those stories, like Iwana Yunga or Sorensen is going to kind of peak at just the right time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And obviously his pro day, he did quite well.
That's what created the situation for him, right? I mean, he really crushed it at the BYU pro day.
A 4.55 in the 40-yard dash.
I think in all those performance skills, at least what's cited in the article on Canal Street Chronicles, I think he would have been in the top five at his position in all those places, right?
Yeah. And you know, it's, all that stuff is thrown out now, right? The combine, your college tape and all that stuff. He now has to come into an NFL camp and perform. That's what it comes down to, right? So...
Right. I mean, nobody cares. It's so funny because they get so cute about the numbers at the combine and all this stuff. And then you show up at the facility and it's like, well, what have you done for me today?
Well, especially as an undrafted.
Right. The whole world shifts on them.
Or even a late round draft pick. Right. I mean, late round draft picks don't always make NFL rosters. They, you know, typically do. But anyway, well, Matt,
I think even high draft picks feel some of that same pressure because they've got to deliver, right?
Oh,
if you don't deliver against that high draft pick, there's going to be problems for you.
Oh yeah, for certain. I mean, yeah, the money feels good, but if you're out of the NFL in 3 years, Tim Tebow, what are you going to do? Play baseball for a living? You know, what are you going
to
do?
He's about to get promoted.
Not on.
He's about to move up a level, dude.
Not on his abilities. So football, Matt, let's stay with football. Big news and scheduling, Matt. Big news. Are you ready? I mean,
I
don't even know what to do with this news. BYU has scheduled a home and home with Liberty University.
Is this really happening?
Yeah. Yeah, Matt, we will be
I can't look.
We will be going to Liberty in 2022. Mark your calendars. You and I will be going.
Somebody will be going. Somebody will be going there. Where is it? I don't even know where it is.
I honestly don't know. So let's look it up. Google machine, where is Liberty University? And is it related to Liberty Mutual
Insurance?
It's
in Virginia.
Of course it is.
It's related to Liberty Mutual Insurance. I don't think so.
Oh, I can't stand those commercials where they're standing in that park that doesn't exist with the Statue of Liberty behind. Isn't that Liberty Mutual?
Yep.
Oh, I can't stand those commercials. Yeah, that park doesn't exist.
It's not an actual place.
Not
an actual place.
You're
well, the Statue of Liberty is, but where they're standing is not.
No, the Statue of Liberty is not a real place. That's just in movies.
It's like the moon landing.
Yeah, it's like the moon landing.
The government's faking it.
Yeah, we didn't ever land on the moon. It's ridiculous. Well, it's ridiculous.
It's all done in a soundstage.
That's right. There's not even Russia.
It's not the Statue of Liberty. That's a giant hologram.
Yeah, Russia's just the bad guys in movies, like Rocky IV. All right. So, Matt, you were going to say...
Was he the good guy? I think the Russians were the good guys and the bad guys in that movie.
Hunt for October, they were. They were. And nothing is better than a movie where they start speaking Russian and then just start speaking in English.
You know what? That's just easier, though.
Just start speaking in English the whole time. Nobody wants to hear Sean Connery speaking in Russian.
Sean Connery.
I don't know why I just did a pirate sound effect. So Matt...
I'm not sure. Probably because of my bad Sean Connery impersonation, which is more like the guy doing Sean Connery on Jeopardy than it is on Saturday Night Live on Jeopardy, than it is the real Sean Connery.
Well, as I said, you remember, George H.W. Bush? I do a very good imitation of the imitation of George Bush.
I do a good impression of Dana Carvey's Ross Perot.
Yes. 1,000 points a lie. No new taxes. Stay the course. Anyway, Matt, you were about to say something about our current president, Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, I believe, spoke at commencement at Liberty University. And the words Brigham Young came out of his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at that. We've hit the big time, BYU has.
Pretty much.
Anyway, so Andre Hutchins on Facebook asked this question, Matt. Home and home with Liberty, question mark? Who is Liberty, question mark? Home and home games with non-P5s is okay, but should BYU be more selective who they give home and home games to? I don't care. This is fine. You're just filling up schedules.
Well, and what you're doing here, this is a team that's moving up into the FBS.
Yes.
And they're independent and all this. BYU is trying to throw these guys a bone.
Yep.
It's fine.
Yeah,
let's not do the we're too good to travel to your stadium and play on the road. Just go play the game.
Yeah.
At this point, like, you just got to fill up the schedule.
This isn't Idaho State. You know what I mean? Like, this is fine, and we like getting on the East Coast, and this is a game on the East Coast. Liberty will be, by the time we play them in Virginia, will have been an FBS school for several years. I think they've
still looking for their first win.
Oh, no, that's probably not true. Other football news, Matt, before we get to basketball, and we're going to finish with basketball here. Josh Oglesby, running back out of Texas, I believe. Am I confusing somebody?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right.
No, he's from Katy High School.
Yeah, that's right, Katy High School, that's right. Small guy, fast. I watched his highlight tape. He can motor. He has signed a talented athletic running back. Matt, the bigger question to me, and this was actually an article in the Deseret News by Tyler Christensen before Oglesby signed, But though actually, let's get back to Oglesby. The guy, he didn't sign, he committed. The guy basically meets the coaching staff and commits. It's a good sign, yep. Right?
Happened pretty quick.
Happened pretty quick. All of a sudden, he's
there. I think
there.
It was like 2 weeks before he committed. He had no contact with the coaches.
Correct. And I believe, if I remember right from the article, their first contact was Reno Mahe via Twitter.
Yeah.
Welcome to recruiting in 2017, mis amigos. All right. So in this article in the Deseret News, basically Christensen lays out that BYU football is building potentially a top 50 type of recruiting class, which would be the highest BYU's had in some time. The class is currently actually ranked top 30 by many of the services, but that this early will fluctuate a ton, right? So don't write that in stone. Matt, you and I talked about this, that the 2017 class, which was kind of a top 65-ish class, depending on the service, is not going to be good enough to take BYU to the next level. Now that Satake has gotten his feet under him and he's now, you know, this will be his second year as a coach and his third recruiting class he's going to bring in officially, do you think it's realistic that he could bring in top 40 classes every year?
Well, he's definitely creating some buzz.
Yes, for
but
sure.
But you know what will bring in these classes better than anything else? I mean, I know he's a good recruiter. I know he's working different pipelines and all this type of stuff. But what's going to bring these guys in are wins.
I was going to say a reduction in the honor code, you know, rules.
That wouldn't hurt. But what's the most likely thing that will be helpful here,
yeah,
is winning games. I mean, look, we've got the stadium. We have a great stadium. We've got good facilities. It's a good academic institution. You've got all of those other pieces, right? What you got to do is you got to win some games.
Yeah,
you got to get on the radar.
Sure.
You got to be a program that's making noise and to tell these guys this is a place you can come. Make an impact and get yourself ready for the next level.
Yeah, I agree. Wins bring recruits. Everybody wants to be part of a winner. It's not the only thing, right? The coaching staff relationships, location. I mean, it's more complex than that. But all other things equal wins. The other thing I think that Christensen points out in this article that I think is really, really important is I'll call it the Jamal Williams effect, okay? And I don't mean Jamal Williams affected this, so it's probably not the right way to say it. But when Bronco Mendenhall's staff started recruiting Jamal Williams, he wasn't on anyone's radar, right? He was a fairly unknown recruit. One of the things Christensen brings out is, for example, I'll use Brandon Cahoe, or I'm not sure how you say his last name. He is a recruit that in this class who is upgraded from 2 to 4 stars by scout. Okay. What they need to do to get a lot of 4 and potentially 5 star recruits is, yeah, you'll get those guys occasionally like a Tanner Mangum or a Fred Warner or Kyle Venoy. But a lot of times you're going to get these guys that were not on the radar as a sophomore or a junior. And all of a sudden at the end of that junior year, they are right. And some of those guys will leave and jump and go, the some of the players they mentioned, Connor Page, Aaron Crump, Cahoe, they all have now offers from Pac-12 schools since they committed to BYU. So there's no given here. But having that, getting on these guys early that are going to blossom and being able to see that ahead of time, that's a big deal. And they've got to be able to do that.
Yep.
So anyway, Matt, let's talk basketball. Okay. We've got a bunch of news since in the last 2 weeks. We're not going to go over it because we're not a news show, obviously. But there have been some interesting news stories. One of them is that a JC transfer signed with the program. Again, not somebody that I had heard much about. a 5'10" guard, Jashire Hartnett, who played at Chipola Junior College in Florida, Matt. Jerem put it this way. I've heard other people put it this way. This is the kind of guard that has given BYU fits over the last decade. Quick, short, can shoot, can dribble with both hands, and I'm pretty excited to be getting one of these guys. And as a JC transfer, in theory, plug and play next year.
It's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, it's great. With the additions that we've had, Celius coming back, are you starting to feel, we'll get to Mika here in a second, are you starting to feel a little better about this team and the roster composition, or are you still in kind of a wait-and-see mode?
I'm definitely still in a wait-and-see mode on the roster composition.
Well, aren't you just a wet blanket?
Pretty much.
You should be predicting Sweet 16 right now.
I'm just a party pooper.
Yep, every party has one. So Matt, the other big news was on the coaching staff. Heath Schroyer, who coached at BYU under Steve Cleveland, has returned. Matt, this is a guy who had been rumored to potentially be coming back. I think I saw it first, though I don't know if this is true that he was the first one to report it, but friend of the podcast, Dick Harmon in the Deseret News, had talked about Schroyer being a potential guy to come back in. He's a defensive coach. Matt, it's been met with kind of a meh on Twitter from the BYU fan base. What's your take on Schroyer being brought back to the BYU basketball team?
Now, while I said I was still kind of in the same space in terms of roster composition, this coaching move has got me kind of excited.
Yeah, me too.
This is what we've been talking about. This is the guy that we need. I don't know why there's such a lukewarm response on Twitter and other places about this. But isn't this what we've all been talking about for a year? Isn't this what we've all been saying we need to do?
I think it's because people wanted some either a name they had heard of outside of BYU sports or somebody who'd never been associated with the program. But you know, bringing in a non-LDS guy who already is familiar with the advantages and disadvantages of BYU, that's a plus to me, not a negative. You don't need to bring some guy in and then 6 months in he goes, oh, crap, what did I sign up for? You know?
Right.
So I'm with you. I was excited when I heard it was him. He's a defensive guy. We need some defensive emphasis. This is, like you said, this is exactly what we've been asking for. But I think that just there's just the mindset right now with BYU basketball that until we prove it on the court, I don't know that in lieu of getting some huge recruit or transfer that we'll never get, that people are going to get excited about next year.
Comes back to just win, baby.
Just win. But, you know, especially if Mika does not come back. But we'll get to that in a second. Another tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
This is from Gary Payne. That's at FastBreakGP on Twitter. He says, Celius, 6'7", Bergerson, 6'6", and now Springer, 6'6". Long defenders at the 2 and 3 spots. Defense, anyone? Question mark. Thoughts? Question mark. Hashtag Paybag. Hashtag Tweetbag. Okay, let's add this all together. He didn't mention Hartnett, who obviously is 5'10", so he's not on the length category.
No, would not have helped that case.
Hartnett, Schroyer, big perimeter players. Matt, this team defensively is going to look, and then throw in Elijah Bryant as well. This team is going to look nothing like defensively like it did last year on the perimeter. That is my prediction. Now, not all of these guys will play tons of minutes, but
I think you're right. This team defensively is going to look nothing like what we saw last year. Now, whether or not that's going to be the step up that we need or the step up everybody's waiting for, that's what we've got to wait and see. But don't tell me that it's not clear that the coaching staff has not very clearly identified where the problem was.
Yes.
And taking some very clear steps to mitigate it.
Yes. Yes.
Else do you want him to do?
I think it's clear that Dave Rose is not just playing lip service to what he said at the end of the year, that they needed to make some changes and they were looking at every aspect of the program. Now, will it work? I don't know. I mean, I liked Seljaas before his mission. I thought he was a very good player and a good contributor. Obviously, the newcomers, it's a little bit of wait and see, right? Whether they will play at the level that that we hope they can play. And obviously, a ton of next year hangs on Eric Mika's decision, right?
Yep.
I mean, if Mika comes back, you know, this is a totally different team with an elite big man. And if he doesn't, they're going to have to, the offense will be completely different. Nothing against anybody else on the roster, but there's no post player quite as good as Mika. So, you know, we'll see. Matt, speaking of Mika, he did okay at the combine. I'm not going to say that, didn't blow people away, depending on the reports that you read. He did, and the NBA combine, I don't know, doesn't get quite the hype that the NFL combine did. He has met with the New York Knicks, the Utah Jazz, among other teams. Matt, to me, the bigger story is there have been some national people weigh in on Mika. Nobody has him anywhere higher than mid-second round. And some of the national folks are saying undrafted.
Yeah, I think he comes back.
Okay, you say think he comes back. So that takes us to Jared's question. That's Jared Roundsville. I pronounced his name incorrectly last week. Sorry, Jared. That's at J Roundsville.
How did you say it last week?
I said Roundsville, but he is saying it's with a D, Roundsville.
Okay.
Roundsville. Maybe I'm still saying it wrong.
The roundabout.
The roundabout.
Turn round.
Turn round.
Tom commercials with Darth Vader.
Oh my gosh.
And Yoda.
The Yoda one's better.
So funny.
Go look them up on YouTube. Tom. Yoda, Tom, Darth Vader. So what's Mika going to do? What's the impact if he stays or goes? Hashtag tweetback. Matt, you think he's staying. I think he's going. I think his comments...
I
don't think he's coming back. Mid-second round. If he gets drafted, if he thinks anybody's going to draft him, he's going. He even talked about playing in the D-League. You know, he's talked about... I think he's gone, man. And maybe it's lip service to make teams think he's totally dedicated to the NBA, but I don't know that he has to do that, right? So I don't know, man. I don't think he's come back. I think we should all just pretend that he's not at this point.
That's really sad.
If he comes back, we are a tournament team. If he does not come back, we are not. That's my take. What about you?
That's true. I agree with that. I just think he's going to come back. But yeah, without him, we're not going to the tournament next year. Well, not the NCAA tournament anyway.
No.
We'll go to the conference tournament.
We'll
maybe
go to
the NIT.
Tournament.
Maybe, you know, some preseason or Christmas tournaments. But not the big dance.
Not the big dance. We won't be dancing with the big boys next year without Eric Mika. Now, we'll all find out. Heck, we may even know by the time we record we'll be on again next week. Well, Matt, this has been a show. We've had a podcast.
We did.
So remind everybody, we will be Matt's journey to be in the New York City Marathon. We'll have more information about how you can support Matt next week. We'll talk about that. The other thing is, Matt, my latest book was released this week, Caliban's World. Last week, a week ago today. The sequel to it comes out next week. Now, the first one is Caliban's World is only 88 pages. And I'll give you guys on the podcast a little secret, okay? If you've been thinking about getting the book, but man, $2.99 is too much. This Mangum guy, Adam, you're kind of entertaining, but I don't want to give you any money. Okay, cool. Next week, when the second book launches, the price will be 99 cents.
Wow, look at that.
You heard it here first. So if you wait till next week, it'll be 99 cents, Caliban's World. So, and then you can also get the second book, Seeds and Masters, which will also be available. So anyway, thank you guys for downloading and listening. I really appreciate all the support from you guys and our listeners. If you've got topic ideas for the summer, fire them our way. We've got some good ideas that we will be using. You can email us at BYU_RiceShout. You can tweet at us at BYU. No, I just did that wrong. You can tweet at us at BYU_RiceShout. You can email us, not at what I said before, at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, go to iTunes. Leave us a review. Tell the world why we're awesome. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.